The Hello Careers podcast explores a system developed to align business needs with education and training. It's proven to be invaluable for dozens of businesses and people looking to create a new life for themselves. We are firm believers that you must screen for attitude and train for aptitude. We're unpacking our insight to help you build partnerships and earn public support for an age-old way of learning a skill, apprenticeship. We'll address issues such as, where there's a skills gap, is there an education and training gap? How do you respond to a tight labor market? What happens when the major employer pulls out of your community? If you're looking to create an apprenticeship program or curious about what to do next, this show could be just the thing you've been looking for. I'm your host, Mark Sylvester. Now, let's get started and talk with the team. Well, welcome back to the show. Michael, Dan, this episode, I want to continue on this thing around partnerships. We talked about business partnerships, that's the client, but we also have educational partnerships. And Michael, just start with, why do I need educational partnerships? Where do they fit into this ecosystem?
Well, right now we're at the startup stage, so we're still iterating and creating what that final product is going to look like. The sustainability really needs to be, how does this fit into your educational institutions? What can high schools, community college, colleges, adult schools, your workforce development training centers, what can they learn from the lessons that we've presented for them here in this opportunity? Because you want to have those partners equal sustainability. No one entity or institution can do all the lifting on their own when you're talking about workforce and economic development.
So right now, who provides the educational service?
So right now, the County Office of Education is the local education agency. And what we've done is we've hired, through the grant funding, our top instructor that we had last year. So we had two instructors. Actually, we had three instructors that we were working with. And one of them lives locally, and he was just the reaction from the students and from the businesses and how adaptable and flexible he was in terms of providing training. That person is now on staff with us and really proving to be invaluable in terms of delivering the training, but also working with the businesses and the apprentices that are there now and what type of further training are they needing. Because it's really, we've gotten the business intelligence of what do we need to get them in the door to the entry-level position, but now what's the upskilling that has to happen? And that's what makes this a valuable partnership with the businesses, but also provides that intelligence of what are the skills and training needed in an evolving sector like tech.
Is it the long-term vision that the community college, or nay, even the high school, would provide some of this training in the future? Or is it outside of the traditional classroom?
I'd like to see how each of those three could play their part. You know, in California, we have a unique concept of local control. So it is up to each district and community of what they want to offer. But I think presenting to them something that's fully formed and that businesses value helps make that choice easier, where they see how this could really contribute to them. So I'd like to think that some of our pre-apprenticeship programs could fit into the high schools. And that's where I think in our county, we have a unique relationship between our local community college and our high schools, in that we have this thing called dual enrollment, where students at our local high schools can get high school credit as well as community college credit for a subject. And it's usually the high school teachers that are teaching those subjects. And many of those courses that they're being offered are in things like computer science, digital media production, engineering. So they're taking something that's a transferable class at the community college level in high school that can count towards an AA degree or a BA degree.
So then the educational partner in that instance is also the partner who's going to suggest students to get into a future cohort.
Yes. We got a number of great referrals from the high school and the community college who really saw this as complementary in getting past that experience barrier.
Right.
That's the heavy lifting that a teacher who has invested heavily in their curriculum and is doing great work in the classroom, that's finding that business partner and going outside of the classroom, that is a big ask for a teacher that's already working full time to also be responsible for the experience training.
So you put a fine point on it when you said get that pre-apprenticeship training. I think it will be really interesting with this partnership to go to them and say, we do this pre-apprenticeship thing. These are the things we're looking at. So they could start to connect the dots to say, okay, well, we're covering grit, we're covering resolve, we're covering, even as we said earlier, that entrepreneurial mindset. What does that look like? So that might not be a class, but it might be across a broad range of classes. And because you have this great partnership and there's this general awareness, listen, the cream's going to rise to the top. As we said earlier, if only 4% are going to make it, who are the best four? Because it feels like when they come to you as a raw recruit, so to speak, you want to be able to pick. Because think of it, if there's 1,000 of them recommended that are the best of the best in the college and the high school, and then you're saying, okay, I'm going to take the best of that, oh my gosh.
Well, what's interesting about what you just said there is right now, someone graduating from high school, they've really only got a couple of options. Say they're at the top of their class, so they are the best. They're competing with the other people that are at the top of their program for these high-level academic programs. In our case, Cal Poly State University is one of the top three computer science programs. They reject 97% of their applicants.
No kidding.
Dan Weeks is on the Cal Poly Advisory Board for computer science. Dan, tell a little more.
Yeah, so what happens is every year the demand increases, but their capacity doesn't. So what ends up happening is the worst phone calls for the dean of engineering is parents of valedictorians who weren't accepted with very high test scores.
So apprenticeship, really what my goal is that why can't that be another option for somebody who wants to pursue a career? But also, you know, how do you create that experience for that student who has no experience? So right now, a computer science graduate graduating from a four-year degree, they still don't really have any experience.
Right.
They're book
right.
smart.
Right.
So they're in a boat, but you've just spent 4 years trying to get somewhere. How do we accelerate that process when we know that the business demands on the existing educational systems exceed the supply?
I think you're also talking about an education gap.
Where there's a skills gap, there is usually an education gap.
So I'm thinking, as an entrepreneur does, 3 to 5 years down the road, how does this look different in 3 years from the educator's point of view?
I think in 3 to 5 years, we should have really strong relationships between our business partners, where that dialogue of what are the evolving skills demands and knowledge demands needed, that is an ongoing dialogue, so it's not a mystery as to what are the education demands, so that schools then have a longer lead time to adjust their programs. We're able to act nimbly and flexibly.
Right.
You know, that's the gift that the County Office of Education and Dr. Breschen have given us to pilot these programs. Then the school systems, whether it be the community college or high school, have that lead time to adjust their programs, allow their instructors to be able to be informed about them, and make those local decisions.
So that gets back to what we said in several episodes now about you being a pop-up university.
Let me give you a good example of that, I think. Right now, we have someone who is a software tester at a tech firm. And what we're doing in the next cohort is we're doing coding boot camps, where at the end of the training, you're at a head of household job. You're at a job that typically pays around $80,000 a year. So what we're looking at doing is for the software testers who now have this foundation on how to do software testing in their first apprenticeship, if they follow it up with their second apprenticeship as a full stack developer, in 2.5 years, we took someone who wasn't in tech and now has 2 years of work experience and all of the training as a software developer, and about half the time is getting a four-year degree.
That sounds certainly really attractive, right?
But that's the vision.
Right.
And ideally, we'd like to be able to have people in high school do the classwork, so they go straight in to the software testing job out of high school.
So what are the numbers, and I'm sure they're going to shock me, on how many high school students don't go on to college?
Well, you know, we've had 20 years of really pushing towards a college for all mentality, and
right.
I'm very much a proponent that all students should be given the opportunity to go to college. But even after that 20-year influence, we've only gone from 20% college graduates nationwide to about 30 to 40%, you know, and 50%, 60% of the students, maybe they go on to a community college or maybe only an AA. And then you have the issue of, are you overeducated for the job you finally get?
Mm-hmm. So
all education is worthwhile,
yes,
but
yes.
I think in a tight labor market and where you're looking at a return on investment of what is the cost of that four-year degree, not everyone has the resources available to do that. And I think taking on that large of a debt for something that you're not sure you can pay off is something you need to take a second look at.
About half of the people going to college don't graduate also. And the ones that do graduate are often in majors that aren't as attractive to employers. So you really have to say, well, what percentage of people are going to school in high demand majors? And that's really a relatively small percentage.
Yeah, both community colleges and universities are struggling with what they call a persistence rate.
Explain that.
So you get an enrollment class, and then you look at what your graduation rates are 4 to 6 years later, and some of them are as low as 50%. That you get people starting a higher education route, and they drop off along the way. They just do not finish what it is.
And I'm sure, as great as our numbers are right now, if we look at this over time, we'll start to see a little bit of that persistence rate. We want to have a high persistence rate. In our case, it's how long do they stay in that first job?
Well, I think part of what Michael said, I think in the first episode, which is about Switzerland and their permeability model, it's not I have to make this key decision at this point or I'm in trouble. You have it that you can go in and out of apprenticeship over time. And you can go, like, for example, someone who isn't accepted in Cal Poly Computer Science, maybe they take a gap year, do a coding boot camp, work for 9 months, and then decide, now what do I want to do? Because I now have a job that pays $80,000 a year, and if I get my four-year degree, it's $95,000.
Right, right. It changed the motivation.
And they're not used to being able to think like that. They used to think like, well, either I go to community college for 2 years, or maybe I take one of my second-tier four-year choices.
So I want to get back to the partnership. Right now you have, I think you said, three teachers, and is this curriculum licensed curriculum that you've gotten the first certification? Is this something you have to license, or how does that work?
So we did a couple of things from the beginning. First, we were working with the CompTIA Foundation. CompTIA is the computer user. It's a professional organization of computer users, and they really they deal with all the certifications. So like
Got
A+
it.
Certification,
okay.
and Network Plus
okay.
certification.
Good.
So they're not affiliated with any one company.
Right.
And they had an existing program that we adopted that was used in some of the bigger cities. We were actually one of the smallest rural suburban areas that they launched in, but we had more applicants than some of their urban areas. So we adopted their IT Futures program, which had the A-plus certification. They had done some good training and good curriculum development with A-plus. Then we customized with some of their existing trainers the IT training as well as the software testing training. The software testing training, that is sort of an unfortified hill in that there's not any specific curriculum around that. Usually it's a module or part of your computer science education. And as Dan was saying earlier, most people who graduate with a computer science degree, they don't want to be software testers.
Right.
And people who do get into that industry, a lot of times they're from liberal arts backgrounds and they fall into it because they're good at proofreading, they're good at quality assurance, they have a good attention to detail, or they just have that mentality of they like to break things. So they sort of arbitrarily get involved in quality assurance. So to be able to intentionally develop a curriculum where you teach them the procedures and protocols, but also screen for, are you the right person that's going to enjoy doing software testing? That's a new area that we're defining. And so we're developing that curriculum and refining that curriculum of what it can look like. And it's really a hybrid of learning some scripting languages along with that quality assurance mindset of knowing the procedures and protocols necessary to create automated test schedules.
So it feels like, again, we're going to, I love the way this is so circular. We went to the business, figured out what they needed. Then you went to the educators who could provide that and said, there's a gap here. We're going to need to write some of this ourselves. I'm thinking that our listener might be thinking, how do I get a hold of that curriculum? So what's the plan? It feels like that might be a sustainability thing for this program, for Hello Careers, to be able to make these modules available, because I'm sure there's other communities, once they start digging in, are going to see they have exactly the same problem.
Yeah, so we're developing and making sure those modules are available hybrid, because there's an online content that we can deliver, but then I think it's important with any, if it's truly hybrid, you need to have that practicum experience. So what are the meetups or lab type environments that you can create where you can see whether they can perform and deliver on the content? And then tying that additionally to the apprenticeship where they have additional experience is really the true hybrid model, where it's not just online and in person, but it's online, in person, and experiential.
I think it's extremely important also to let people go at the pace they're able to learn. And when you have a traditional classroom that you sit there between 9 and 4, the class goes a certain pace. The more you do a hybrid model, you let everyone go at their pace. And then the employers can actually see, well, who did 3 certifications in 4 weeks versus 1 certification in 4? Because they went at their pace as opposed to the standard pace the educator had to say, because everyone's in the class doing the same curriculum, you know, step by step over the time.
Yeah, there's no shortage online of this personalized learning and online content.
It's crazy.
There's almost too much of it.
Right.
And an individual who's persistent and really battle-hardened can slog their way through that and figure it out. But most people quit very quickly.
Yep.
So how you create that support structure through meetups and that in-person intervention, and the intervention can be to recover someone or to accelerate someone, that's really where the business partnerships come in that help give that abstract content the context of how it's going to work in the business.
And we know that once they get hired, you're going to check in with them every 2 weeks. And so how in the 14-week period, how many times does the business person come in and check in on the cohort?
What we did for the first time, it was really in the first 8 weeks, we had businesses come in that had both IT and software testing people, both, to explain what the difference was.
Oh, good.
So it wasn't biased.
Good.
Of which direction. And then, so that's what we did in the first 8 weeks, is just to help people in a non-biased way say, what path should you go? And then when we're in the final 6 weeks of training, we had 3 employers per week coming in pitching.
Oh, right, because we know there's a finite resource of these 27.
Yeah, so right? it was pitch, almost like pitching to a VC.
How did they do?
Most of them did really well. The ones that were salesy didn't do well at all.
Give me an example of salesy.
They were acting as if they were selling to a potential customer their product, as opposed to saying, here's what's great about working for our company and the challenges you'll get. Like, for example, one of the companies, when they did their interviews, they were too easy. And another company really put the people through the paces. And the one who put them through the paces, everyone wanted to work for, because that person assumed, you know a lot, and I'm going to see just how far I can go with you. When the company was really easy, it's like they were assuming we didn't know anything. But it was interesting. They wanted to be pushed because they just went through this intense 14-week program. They want to show off a bit.
Do you think that that learning is going to affect how you coach these companies when they come in to pitch?
Oh, we did, because one of the companies—
Oh, you did already?
Yeah, one of the companies got a bunch of people not saying yes to them. And I said, well, I'll tell you why. And then they came back and talked to people they hadn't before, and they completely listened. And then they got three people on the second round.
I heard recently I was interviewing a marketing guy on how do we cut through the clutter. There's so many messages that we deal with every day. He said you have to rethink. He says people don't buy value, they buy values. And it made me think that your screening for attitude, which is all value-based, it's 100% value-based, and that it's almost like you want to screen those business partners for attitude as well, so that you've got that good match, right? It's like, I know that that particular work environment is going to attract a certain kind of student, like that's whatever that means, right? And the values that they place on it, this is going to be perfect because it's going to be a value match. When we worked with TED originally, they said, when you meet at TED, because you're meeting some amazing people, it's TED, right? That you might have skills in common and expertise in common. You might have all these things in common. But what he wanted to do was make sure that the relationship you built at TED lasted beyond the 4 days. And he says, you have to have common values. And that was 15 years ago that I got schooled by him to say, that's what's important. That's what makes our tribe different. And I think that's what makes this program different, because it doesn't say train for attitude, screen. No, it's screen for attitude first. Right? That's that first thing you do that get us from the 900 down to our 100. I want to understand what the ongoing the second year, the third year looks, and I know you're not there yet, but what do you think that's going to look like for the students, and how can you work with the educational partners to help those students in the second, because they're kind of still students in the second year, I'm going to guess.
So I think the biggest change that we're looking forward to is for the first cohort, because we had no credibility, we had to do a lot more front loading of the training to get them to that billable hours.
Right.
In discussions with many of the businesses now, we're trying to figure out how we can more blend that so that we can get people more quickly into the experience, so that they're not so much a lot of abstract thought, a lot of content delivery up front, and then, all right, now go, if you have the fire hose, drunk as much as you can,
right?
Set them loose and give them the experience of how we can marry those more closely together by chunking the knowledge so it's just-in-time knowledge. Give them the experience, just-in-time knowledge, give them the experience. So those are the conversations we're having with businesses now of how do you do that without making it disruptive to your clients and your customers and your work environment.
And you said in an earlier episode that possibly it's not just one cohort, but there are four cohorts that are staggered across time.
Yeah.
I think what the businesses are saying is if we're going to have a shorter duration for the first set of classes, let us be involved who's even admitted into the program, which in the first cohort, they wouldn't want to be involved that early. This time they're saying, let us be involved in the early step of who we think should be in.
Okay, so let's. What would that look like if I've got my 100 on video and now let the employers go in and help, where are we going to put the bets on the 50?
Yeah, so it looks more
like they didn't do that.
It's more of a clearinghouse approach.
Okay.
Where we can help vet and screen, and everyone plays a role in deciding who's our best bets moving forward.
There's a probably an opportunity for someone who's listening to the show to actually write something for you, a web-based something that would work really well. So you could figure out, you knew what the criteria was on what makes a potentially great employee. Starts with, they interviewed really well, they went through all, and you guys know it because you've now done this. You know what to look for, and you could tell.
Yeah, if you look at an apprenticeship, a pre-apprenticeship and an apprenticeship, it's really a one-year hiring process.
Mm.
And so what does that one-year hiring process look like? So at the end of the apprenticeship, when you've invested some of your time in there, as a business, you're not obligated to take on that person at the end of 1 year. But when you look at the investments you've made, wouldn't you want to hire that person?
Of course.
So that's where I think it's a return on investment. We're taking some of the risk out for the businesses, so they have this 1 year onboarding time, presumably with all apprentices. You're getting a loyalty factor too.
Right.
So these are all, you know, returns on investments and benefits that for the employer and the employee, even if the apprentice isn't selected to continue with that company, they at least walk away with 1 year of experience that's transferable to a different company, especially if in our case where we have a multi-employer program.
Right, right.
One of their competitors maybe will pick them up. So that hiring process is really a one-year approach of how we can onboard an employee.
So bringing it back to educational partners, one of the things that you said earlier was this organization can be very nimble and be very responsive as things change. We know that cloud computing has changed everything. So what are we teaching stuff about clouds? We know with recent events that data security and all that implies is epically huge problem to be solved. Yet you also said, Michael, in an earlier episode that curriculum development, because of whatever reasons we bureaucracy and et cetera, just takes a long time. Is there a role for Hello Careers in an early, not warning, but you see things faster than other people, and because you've got this really great relationship with the educational partners, they don't have to drink from the fire hose. They say, oh, these are the 10 things we're seeing, and we're gonna take care of it in a pop-up university, but you know what? If you picked 1, 2, and 3, you could get the 101 version of that thing done so that when they get to us, we're not having to do the really fundamental work. Am I on the right path?
Yes, it's more of feeding hungry fish.
Back to the fish.
That which teachers and institutions can take on those, how much weight can they lift? And with on-the-job training, that's your most nimble type of training.
Yes.
It's happening in real time. It's dynamic. And the learning is there. And by having the journeyman there to help unpack it and help make sure that there really was, that the learning sticks, that the experience sticks, that is your most nimble and dynamic type of curriculum delivery right there.
Which seems relevant also. The challenge when you do that 14 weeks just up front, they're not sure which is and is not relevant once they get on the job. But if it's during the on-the-job training and they're partnering with their journeyman, it's very clear. I need to know more of this because it's going to help me move up in this company.
Exactly. And it feels like you have put in really tight communication loops throughout the entire process.
Well, like the apprentices, Michael found this software called WorkHands. It's from an iPhone app. They just type in which of their work processes they're doing right now, so we're able to track on an easy way.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of fun using that app, and that right now, when we first got onto it, it was all for the traditional trades. So it was a lot of plumbers, electricians, laborers, mechanics, auto people, and I had to request from the company to get IT specialist and software tester on there. And this is a startup company in itself too, because you normally a lot of apprenticeships they track their attendance and their work process hours all by paper. And I wanted to make this much more easy so that the apprentice can track their hours, report it to their supervisor, get them approved, and I can see what their hours are on an ongoing basis and putting the pressure on the apprentice to report what they're doing.
Right.
And the software, the company that's working with this, they were real excited to have IT and software testers on there. And they said, I've been teasing them that, so when are you going to get your apprentices?
So that we'll make a link to that. It's WorkHands.
WorkHands.
No, so we'll really put a link in the show notes. Because that's, again, part of what makes this work is all the partnerships you have built, whether it's a technology partnership that you know we've got to have that to make it work, human partnerships, all of that. So we keep hitting that thread. You guys, we're again at the end of another episode. We just, bam, we're just blowing through these. It is so great. What we're going to do next, our next episode, I want to talk about working with public sector partners, because it's very different if we start talking about politics and public sector and all of that. So until next time, thanks, guys. Thank you for listening. How will you bring this system to your community and say hello to new careers and goodbye to low-wage jobs? For more episodes, visit hellocareers.org or send us a note to podcast@hellocareers.org. We'd love to hear from you with questions or success stories of how apprenticeship is working in your region. Till next time, I'm Mark Sylvester with Hello Careers.